Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and that's Erica Badu, that soldier. She was born on this day in 1971. Happy birthday, Erica Badu. And we're now going to jump into a conversation about the use of pain medications. It's a very complex world of pain medications in our society. Just a piece of history. There was a man named Frederick Sechtomer who was experimenting with opium and created something new. It was called morphine, named after the Greek god of sleep and dreams, Morpheus, in 1904. And that was a little while back, over 111 years ago. But today, 200 years ago, I should say, not 100, my math is bad, that 8 million Americans fall asleep every night under the influence of some opioid, that people, and 40 people do not wake up from those things. We are living in a world now where many people are taking medications beyond what we ever thought would happen. And there are also issues on the other side of people not being prescribed medications when they're needed to alleviate that pain, and even further issues involved around racial perceptions and the need for pain medication. So we're going to try to wrestle with as much of that as we can during the course of this brief time we have on this topic here. We are joined by Dr. Thelma Wright, Assistant Professor of Anesthesiology at the University of Maryland School of Medicine and Director of Pain Management of the Pain Management Center at the University of Maryland Rehabilitation Orthopedics Institute. Dr. Wright, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Jan Amasi is with us. She is Professor of Epidemiology and Biostatistics in the School of Public Health at Drexel University. Dr. Amasi, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Look forward to it.
Is it Amasi? It is Amasi, right?
Amasi, yes.
I make sure I had that right. And Nancy Fish is in studio, advocate for people who suffer chronic pain. Nancy, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. I'm grateful to be here.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. And so let's jump into this initial part of this. And the question is, it's a real conflict in the society around the question of and we had this program just a few weeks ago about how so many people are addicted to opiates in the culture that we have. And many of those millions of people addicted to opiates are addicted to opiates that are legal, that are prescription-based. On the other hand, we have people who are in chronic pain who need the opiates. So, I mean, let me begin there. And Nancy, since this program began in part because of your connection was sent to us, let me let you start, and then I want to go right to Dr. Wright.
Okay. One of the reasons that I'm here is of my frustrations and dealing with a family member that has suffered with chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
And this started back in 2004. He had a spinal fusion, okay, first double and then two singles. And this was after an accident. And prior to that, he was a ski instructor, a triathlete, and, you know, a very productive person in society. But my frustration started when, after his first spinal fusion, the surgeon told me he's going to be a candidate, more than likely, that be on pain medicine inevitably.
Right.
The rest of his life. And that's when the challenges for me became unreal and frustrating. And I have, you know, I've read articles. I'm a member of the American Pain Association that, you know, he's not the only person that's struggling. There's over 116 million people that are affected by undertreatment from pain due to the war against drugs. And one out of every three people in this country suffer from chronic pain. Now, I'm not saying that narcotics is the total answer, but it should be part of the regimen, and we should make it more accessible to people that truly need it, that makes their quality of life better and makes a difference.
So, Dr. Wright, let me let you respond to that, because this is something we hear a lot, and we've had in this program over the last 20-some years, talking about this at various times, that enough medication is not given out to me. People are in pain, and so can you respond to that?
You see, I agree with what she's saying, that there's no reason for a patient who has chronic pain to continue to be in pain. However, opioids is not the be-all. It's not the only medication available to doctors to treat chronic pain. I have patients who have what she's talking about. We call it failed back surgery syndrome or post-laminectomy pain syndrome, and they are not necessarily on opioids. At University of Maryland Pain Management Center, we practice a multidisciplinary pain approach, meaning we use other modalities. We can use physical therapy. We can use anticonvulsants, especially patients who've had multiple surgeries may actually have nerve pain, not necessarily pain from the surgery itself. So what we do is we start with medications like anticonvulsants, and these are anti-seizure medications, which actually will help with pain that patients complain that go down their legs. Now, you also have patients who say, I'm also having spasms around my incision site. Muscle relaxants will help with that. Anti-inflammatory will help with that. However, if after I've done all these modalities, including referring them to acupuncture, referring them to PT, they're still complaining of pain, then I may add what we call a long-acting opioid. I don't like using the term narcotic because that really has a different connotation because that involves cocaine and all the other drugs out there. So I usually use the term opioids. So we use opioids because, you know, opioids do not have, they don't come without risk. So I do use opioids. However, if I can treat a patient without having to start with opioids, I will do that. And there are other advanced modalities out there, like spinal cord stimulator. And the spinal cord stimulator may actually work for the speaker's family member where, you know, they've had multiple surgeries, they continue to have pain. And basically what we're doing is tricking the central nervous system to think the patient doesn't have pain. And this pain is actually replaced with a better sensation which the patient can tolerate. So there are other modalities. I mean, opioids are not the only thing we have in our toolbox. There are other things we can do to help this patient.
So I mean, before we come back to our guest in studio here to kind of have her comments, I saw her reactions as you were speaking, Nancy Fish. Let me ask Dr. Massey to join in and your thoughts on this and what you've seen in kind of a broader scope.
Well, I think that what Dr. Wright was saying is absolutely correct. And maybe even given the issue of the opioids and the street market potential for them and the real concern that people have that of the actual addiction of non-pain patients in the community, there are many other possible types of treatment for pain. And perhaps one of the big issues for the pain patient is the lack of information about what the alternative treatments are and or the availability and funding of those. I don't think that anybody would like to have as your, I assume it's your son.
No, it's my brother.
Pardon?
It's my brother.
Your brother, okay. Be in chronic, unremitting pain without any possibility of getting appropriate treatment. And in the final analysis, yes, it is possible. There are people who are put on long-term opioid therapy and can manage very well. Not everybody is eligible for that, nor can many people tolerate it. But I think it's not just a simply, no, putting it differently, it's much more complicated than thinking that the opioids are not available because of the, quote, war on drugs, and that there are no other alternatives that are possibly to be explored.
So, Ms. Fish, why are you shaking your head? Nobody can see you do that but
okay.
me, but go ahead.
All right. I'm shaking my head because I do agree with you in saying that you need to use a balanced approach with the patient. And opioids is not the cure or the end-all. But what I found since 2004, doctors are in such fear of even including that in the regimen that they treat the patient like an addict. They throw them out in the streets. They hold them hostage to even consider using an opioid as in conjunction with something else unless they get, for example, spinal stimulator, which he tried and it didn't work, unless they get an epidural, which tried and didn't work. He's been managing the last couple of years on short-lasting and long-lasting opioids.
Let me just make it focus on the mic. And
okay, I'm sorry.
Okay.
And it's been a struggle finding a doctor that's compassionate, that's understanding. I've gone from doctor to doctor. The last doctor that he saw was from Hopkins. And he saw when we called to make the appointment, and he was recommended, very compassionate doctor. He does prescribe opioids to some patients. And I had told them on the phone, I sent the records over what he was on. And when we got to the appointment, he said, absolutely not. All I do is intervention. So we were literally like, where do we go from here? And this has been a fighting battle ever since. Getting a doctor that doesn't live in fear of prescribing that along with, and if that's what works for him, because it's worked for him, then give him some relief.
So let me ask you, I do want to talk to Dr. Moss about, I just want to get Dr. Moss back for a moment. Let's ask Dr. Wright to respond a little bit, because I think that, I mean, it seems that one of the things that does happen in hospitals is that people have to fight, it seems, the system to get pain medications for people. That was also my experience a couple years ago with a dear friend who had an operation that I had to call a vice president of a hospital to even get them to begin to think about the pain medications were needed. There always does seem to be a constant battle. Dr. Wright.
I'm sorry. I thought you were waiting on a response from the other doctor.
No, I'm going to Dr. Masi about another issue that we don't have time to really get into, which is really critical to this, but let me ask you that first.
Let me give you a scenario usually when we get a patient like the speaker is describing. So we usually will get a referral from Dr. A saying, I have a patient I would like you to see. Now, if a patient comes to me and is on, I'm just pulling out a number, 80 milligrams of OxyContin 3 times a day, and morphine, short-acting, 30 milligrams every 3 hours, and they had surgery 10 years ago, and they're still saying they're a pain score of 10, however, that's the dose that's working for them, I will not continue it. I have no problems writing opioids, and that's I'm actually on the board for the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program. I am on the advisory board, so I don't have a problem writing opioids. However, if a patient comes through the door with such high doses and endorsing pain scores of 10 out of 10, obviously the opioids are not working. So what do? You either wean down and off those opioids and change them, or think of some other modality which will work for the patient. Now,
and you are unusual, doctor.
I'm sorry?
You're saying what you... My experience of having appointments with pain management doctor, what you're saying is very unusual. Usually they don't even go there saying, I would prescribe to certain patients.
But then they may not prescribe those doses. However, if a patient has pathology, they've had 4 or 5 surgeries, they have a reason to have pain, I usually send all my patients to my pain psychologist. We have a pain psychologist in the clinic, 2 of them, and they will see the patient, screen the patient, and make sure the patient does not have any comorbid psychiatric problem, addiction issues. And if the patient is deemed a candidate for long-term opioid therapy, we will write opioids for the patient. However, we may not write those high doses because you can't show me any evidence that tells me high doses of opioids have worked or fixed the patient.
Let me just bring Dr. Massey in for a moment. Dr. Massey, I apologize. One of the reasons I really wanted you here today, and we can do this for a much longer stretch another day, is to kind of – because there's other aspects of this as well, and I think that it has to do with who we give opioids to, who we give pain medication to, and how and when, and what the studies have shown that are pretty frightening when it comes to issues around race.
Well, yes. Now, I know that there have been some improvements since the research has been published, but typically we find that a fairly large amount of evidence suggesting that both with acute pain and chronic pain, and it's important to remember that these are two different things. And acute pain is, when you break your leg and you go to the ER, and you're in a lot of pain, you'll be medicated, you'll be given something until the pain subsides and the healing begins. But that will be a short regimen. But what we have found historically is that even in ERs, in operating rooms, post-surgery, that individuals of color and individuals who are of minority background tend to be given lower, less effective types of pain medicine than their kind of equivalent Caucasian counterparts. The initial discussions when physicians were spoken about this, things came up, well, you know, they're going to take it, and one of the issues for sending people home with opioids, a prescription, is, well, it's going to get sold on the street. It's going to get diverted into the non-pain addiction population. But much of the literature has shown, or many of the studies have shown, that, in fact, where we find this still even is in the hospital setting where there is no opportunity for diversion. And I think those of us who have looked at this see it really as one of the underpinnings in the society where there's a racial underlying discrimination, an expectation that some racial groups are not going to be as responsible. I can't say that it's that people think they're not going to be as deserving, but there's just, it's not that they think that there's a difference in how the individual, depending on the race, metabolizes the pain medicine, but there's some underlying issues that many people still harbor in this country.
What were you about to say, Nancy Fish?
I feel that it's not necessarily racial discrimination. I feel like, as being a caregiver of somebody who's in chronic pain, that everybody that seeks out pain medicine for treatment are discriminated against.
Well, there's two separate levels here. I mean, there's all these studies showing how people of color are not given the pain medications in much lower range than people who are white in America. I think that's true. But the other question is the broader question of whether or not people are giving adequate pain management for what they're experiencing. And when we have stats like you talked about earlier, we only have a few minutes left here, so I want to get into this for just a minute. It's a question of one out of three people being in chronic pain. Let's very quickly talk about what that means. I mean very quickly talk about what that means. Dr. Wright, to Nancy Fish, what do we mean by one out of three people in America is in chronic pain?
So the definition of chronic pain is pain that has lasted more than, some books will say 3 months, some books will say 6 months. So a patient who's had, you know, acute pain from whatever reason, surgery, a motor vehicle accident, however, pain continues beyond 3 to 6 months, that's chronic pain. So that's a patient living with chronic pain. And there are several reasons a patient will be in pain. Your usual arthritis, it could be just, you know, a back strain, that just continues. You have complex regional pain syndrome, which is a syndrome that occurs after surgery you've had years ago. So there are other reasons that a patient may be living with chronic pain.
Nancy.
Okay.
What do you think should happen that's not happening?
What I think should happen is that doctors should, physicians, especially pain management physicians, should understand the frustrations of people that are suffering in chronic pain and getting treated correctly and getting access to prescriptions if they need to, not to be turned away. If they take an extra pill, they will fire them as a patient. If they go to the ER, they have all these parameters to be even a patient for pain management. If they go to the ER while they're under the care of the doctor will drop the patient. And there's so many things going on, fears on the medical side, that is not addressing the people getting compassionate treatment.
We have an email from Connie who just wrote in. I'll let the physicians have a kind of a closing words here as well. Connie wrote in, doctors need to be trusted to prescribe opiates without fear of losing their license. My husband has severe sciatic nerve damage and was denied legal pain remedies, prescriptions, until his cancer diagnosis. In some ways, his life is better because of having adequate medication. It was just sent in by email. So your final very closing thoughts, last couple of minutes we have, and the same, we'll come back to this another day. Dr. Wright and Dr. Mossy.
I mean, I'm very sorry for the writer who just sent the email in. I do say that doctors have a hard time determining who really has pain because, unfortunately, we don't have any blood work that tells us, yes, the patient has pain, or no, the patient doesn't have pain, like high blood pressure, where you know the patient has high blood pressure, so I can treat it. With pain, you have to believe what the patient says. And, yes, we have a hard time determining who is really in pain and who is not, and you have to go with either, I wouldn't say gut, but you go, we use other modalities like using a pain psychologist, using MRI findings, and other electrodiagnostic findings to treat the patient. And I will speak out to other physicians that if a patient comes to see you, yes, please be compassionate, be empathetic, and try to treat the pain as much as you can with multidisciplinary modalities. And if an opioid is indicated, do not be afraid of prescribing those opioids because we, you know, the prescription drug monitoring program is there to help us and guide us in what we do. And really, the board, who I sometimes work for, they're not there to, you know, punish any doctor who is writing and prescribing responsibly.
So we're just almost really out of time. We're really out of time here. Okay. Dr. Mossy, have one final word, and then if we have time, a quick 10-second thought. We're really almost out of time. Dr. Mossy?
Well, I kind of agree with Dr. Wright that there are measures that we identify individuals who are misusing some pain medication, and doctors, if they have any evidence that it's a person who has a history of that, they're going to be very reluctant. But a patient coming in for the very first time who they're seeing and has what appears to be a legitimate chronic pain and is the physician should be compassionate. And there are methods, there are contracts that are made between the doctor and the patient about the use of opioids. And
I'm sorry, that music just said, I apologize to all of you, but I have to come back to this another day very soon. We just got butted up against the clock here, so my apologies, Nancy
thank
Fish.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you with us. Thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. Right. Dr. Jana Mossy and Dr. Thelma Wright, good to have you all with us as well. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineers, Andrew Melton. Our intern and day in history research producer, Sienna Greaves. Theme music by Walt Matthews with Clean Cuts. On the way out of here, we're hearing Them Changes by Buddy Miles, who passed away on this day in 2008. To podcast The Mark Steiner Show and share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.